Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy, late. All right, so it's a minute and a half past 8 o'clock here on the East Coast. I am officially 2 hours late. I got an hour's worth of program to do. But after last night's technical abortion, I was not going to let this happen two nights in a row without getting behind the microphone at least a little bitty bit. Okay, here's why I was late. Margie went on a trip this week to become a young Democrat. And she's had a field trip to Washington, D.C. and all kinds of stuff. And they were supposed to be back by, I think, 4 o'clock. They didn't get back by 4 o'clock. And that's why I didn't get back from my long trip to Charleston until 8 o'clock. But golly, I'm glad to be back behind the microphone. I hated missing yesterday. We've hardly gotten a chance to talk at all about David K. Johnson's appearances both in Institute West Virginia near South Charleston and Beckley at the campus of Concord Beckley University. And that being the case, you know, we can talk about that a little bit this evening. We can talk about a lot of things. A couple of callers already on the lines. No way was I going to miss two nights. I just wasn't going to do it. On an irony-rich day like this, when George Bush is out there saying things like, no regime should ignore the will of its own people. What? The regime has also, talking about Zimbabwe, the regime has also continued its ban against NGO activities that would provide assistance to the suffering and vulnerable people of Zimbabwe. No regime should ignore the will of its own people and calls from the international community without consequences. That means he wants to bomb Zimbabwe. They must have found a can of 3-in-1 oil around there somewhere or something like that. Never mind that the will of the American people has been ignored for, you know, 8 years. Never mind that. No, irony is lost on those creepy people. So, no, on a day like now, I wasn't going to let that one slide. I know. But we'll go straight to the phones. Hey, Wayne, what's up?
Hey, buddy, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
How you doing? Good. I hadn't heard the Zimbabwe comments, but, I mean, you know, who is this guy to comment on anything?
Oh, sure. Well, the other one that I loved especially well too is the State Department's call to Iran today, telling them that they had to negotiate and make a deal with the Bush administration. And this was the best part, Wayne, because you can't wait until a new president is in office. You can't. You have to negotiate with us. Now, you know, you might remember a little better than me. Am I mistaken, or do I remember something along about 1980, 1981? Where the filthy little repig-licking party basically struck a deal whereby they traded arms for hostages in order to keep our hostages in captivity so that they would deal with President Reagan instead of a reelected President Carter. Is that just me, or is that what happened?
That was called the Iran-Contra.
I knew it had a name, yeah.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, one of the chief traitors that was involved in the whole deal was a guy that was called Oliver North. colonel, you know, and, you know, instead of going to jail, he has his own radio program.
Oh, instead of going to jail, my home church down in Alabama gave him $26,000 one time to come and tell him about morality.
Could be, exactly.
Yeah.
And this has been a very exciting week for me. One, the David Clay Johnson thing, and, you know, that was very good. And, well, you kind of watched that whole thing. I don't know if you realize exactly, but, you know, I set that thing up pretty good for what I wanted to do. And, you know, I got to confront my good friend, the priest, that I've been fighting for 5 years.
Yes.
So, you know, that was rather exciting. And
yeah, you mean the man of God who doesn't like for people to make a living wage, that guy?
Or have health insurance or a pension, you know.
Right.
You know. You might compromise on eventually giving you a living wage, but you're not allowed to have health insurance and pension. You know? And, you know, this guy, well, you know, I've been fighting him for 5 years. And he is trying to, this is a priest, a Jesuit priest. He is trying to eliminate prevailing wage in the state of West Virginia. Right? That's what he's trying to do.
Right.
Now, he'll still call it a prevailing wage, only it'll be, somewhere along the line of 60 or 70% of what you're getting now.
Right.
Yeah, you know, that's what it does. But today, you know, this is, and I guess you've watched, you know, the Obama and being in Berlin and blah, 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 and all that stuff. And, you know, which I happen to think that he did extremely well on this thing. And, you know, I mean, McCain and all them people are crying, you know, about him being there. They're the ones that supposedly forced him to go. You know, he's never been there. They called for him to go, so he went, and he's a huge success, and so they're upset about it. The, you know, our local radio show that, you know, well, you used to have a show on that station.
Yes.
You know, I'm...
back before I became too dangerous for terrestrial radio.
You became too dangerous, and told the CEO of Appalachian Regional Healthcare to bite you. Yeah, that was a grave mistake.
Yeah.
Anyway, today, you know, I mean, I'm a glutton for punishment. I have to listen to this, and I want you to know, I mean, I try very, very hard, and most of the time I'm successful in not calling, because I do realize you can't win with this. You know, I mean, you're not talking to a person with knowledge, reason, or any of those attributes. You know?
Right.
And he controls the mic and the switch and, you know, all that jazz. But I'm, you know, I was coming back from somewhere heading towards my office this morning, and he was on, and he started a program about the Berlin appearance and why would 200,000 Germans show up to see Barack Obama.
Oh, God, I'm glad I didn't hear this.
Yes. So, and he discovered why they did it, how they did it. They had rock bands there.
Oh, so, of course, they didn't come to see Obama.
They came for the bands.
Right.
And, you know, he's pulled this before. I mean, when he had the...
Yeah, that's what they claimed about the...
people in Oregon or...
Right.
It was Oregon, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. You know, it's because they had rock bands. And, you know, I mean, he's going on and on and on. Why would two, they don't have anything, you know, they can't vote. Why would 200, and by the time I got to the office, Bob, I was enraged, okay? Truly enraged. And I could no longer hold back.
Ignorance does that to you.
Yes, he does. So I called. And, you know, he doesn't have a screener, so he always say, hey, caller, who do I got? You know,
yeah,
similar to us now, but he never had a screener.
Right.
And never will be able to have it, even if they get the more money than anybody has in the world, never be able to get a screener as good as our lovely Agnes.
No.
So, hey, who have I got? I said, it's Wayne, Steve. He says, hey, Wayne, how you doing? I said, good. I says, this Berlin trip's really eating you up, ain't it? And it was, you know. I said, let me try to explain to you why 200,000 Germans would come to see this guy. I said, because they come to see this guy because they see. I said, let me tell you something. I said, you know, people, Europeans and all over the world love Americans. Not according to the Democrats, they don't. I said, no, no, no. That's what not what they don't like. I said, what they don't like is what George Bush and this administration has done to the image and integrity of this country. And what them people came to see Barack Obama for is because they have a hope and a wish that America becomes what they grew to love, that it gets its dignity and integrity back, that it becomes the shining light that a lot of people grew up to believe that it was, that rights are restored to people and that we are no longer in, that we do not have preemptive wars and torture people. And you know, and that, well, you can imagine where it went from there. I didn't get to say too much more before.
No. I'm surprised you got that much out.
Yeah, I am too. I am too. You know, and then.
Well, you by touching on that, Wayne, you bring up a topic that I one of the reasons I wanted to get back this evening because, you know, there's a new torture memo out, right?
Yeah, I do.
And yes, do you remember, let's see, their first line of defense was, it isn't torture if it doesn't cause, what was it, severe bodily harm
or death.
Yeah, organ failure or death.
Right.
Then it's not torture.
Right.
And then they came out with the John Yoo business of, it's not torture because even if it's torture and we say that it's not. Well, this latest one that came out, it was 18 pages at long. 10 pages of it had a black magic marker taken to it. I'm surprised that there was anything left besides to and thank you at the end. But there was enough in there to, and this language is just astonishing to me, there was enough in there to show that the United States has, not the United States, but the White House, and what I'm getting at is this is why it was important for Obama to go to Europe. To try to restore our relationship, exactly what you're talking about, because we have an administration that is now arguing. This is just nuts. That it's not torture if the person doing the torture believes in good faith that the torture
isn't hurting them,
isn't causing prolonged mental harm.
Yeah.
And as long as he believes that in good faith. Okay. In other words, let's say that I'm sitting there pulling out some dude's fingernails, trying to get him to tell me where Osama bin Laden plays poker on Thursdays.
Yeah. Right.
And somebody says, "Hey, you're torturing him. You're pulling out his fingernails." No. I have a good faith belief that I am performing a manicure with extreme prejudice. Then it's not torture. That is what the Bush administration has made of this country.
Am I correct in saying that this memo came out before the war?
Oh, yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, yeah. It's true.
So they were planning this all.
Yeah, this is a series of memos between 2002 through 2004.
And we invaded?
In 2003.
In 2003. Hey. That's what I'm talking about. I get so upset with these people, and especially, you know, that guy and his whole crew. I mean, you know, he's got five or six people that call regularly, and all they talk about is how hateful liberals are and how hateful, you know, the left is. And
it's kind of charming, really, isn't it?
People spew more hate. I mean, it's absolutely disgusting. The hate, you know, callers that are dying for cancer or from cancer, hate unions, hate Democrats, hate Social Security, hate any socialist program that provides, you know.
Well, you know, the same thing of
people and stuff like that. And the guy talking is a minor who I know he doesn't have health care because He hates unions, so he couldn't be in the union. He couldn't have a medical card from United Mine Workers. So he's living on Medicare that we're paying for. Medicare, Medicaid, whatever. He doesn't have an income, so he's getting Social Security disability that he hates, that the Democrats created. How do you get people to stop voting against their self-help? You know, I think I've had this conversation before, too. You know, how do you get people to quit voting against their own self-interest?
And that's the tough call. I mean, that really is. And that's the struggle. See, if you could get people to quit voting against their own interests, Wayne, the membership in the Republican Party would diminish to about
drop the zip.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nothing but those people who are on corporate welfare that David K. Johnston was talking about a few nights ago. The Republican Party would be made up of Paris Hilton, Karl Rove, George Bush, and the Grover Norquist.
Exactly, and we never talk about corporate welfare and corporate socialism. I mean, you know, did they pass it today? I mean, did we bail out Freddie and
then
somebody else? I, you know, Freddie and Lucy or whoever the hell.
Oh, yeah, Freddie and Fannie.
Yeah, Freddie and Fannie. Yeah. What is that? That's corporate welfare, is it not?
Well, to the extent that we're covering, yeah, because it was on one end, the bill would have allowed people who are in foreclosure troubles out of this whole mess to refinance their notes with the permission of the lending agency. On the other hand, it just gave a purely pure welfare bailout, you know, paid for by you and the rest of America, to Freddie and Fannie. Now you heard the other night, and I suspect that the situation is much the same. Did you hear? And it was during the Beckley lecture. Did you hear when David K. Johnston was talking about Sallie Mae? Now,
yeah.
Sallie Mae is the organization that administers federally guaranteed student loans.
Yes.
The private CEO of Sallie Mae is so rich that he built himself an 18-hole golf course on land in the D.C. area. Where a postage stamp, as Mr. Johnston noted, where a postage stamp-sized piece of ground goes for $1 million.
Exactly.
So who's going to get the bailout of Freddie Mae and Fannie Mae or Bernie Mac and Ellie Mae? I don't know. Who's going to get that bailout money, Wayne?
The CEOs.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, you know, Freddie and Fannie guy, I think one of them makes $200 million and the other one only makes $165 million. I don't know what his deficiency is, but, you know. But we're going to bail them out. And if this thing turns them around and they get to become profitable, we don't get our money back. I like that one.
What a dodge.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if I did anything resembling that on a sidewalk in any city in America, let's say down on Forbes Avenue in Pittsburgh, I was running a scam like that, I'd be in jail inside of 5 minutes.
Yeah, you would. So, and you know, bringing up David K. Johnston again here, I mean, I asked somebody if they would invite my friend the priest to this event.
Yes.
And, because I wanted him to hear what he had to say, what Johnston has to say. Did you notice that even when I was talking to him after the event, did he have a book in his hand? Did he get one of those books?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. Anyway, I wanted
to... Let's put it this way. He didn't buy one of those books any more than Don Blankenswein did the other night in the Institute.
Okay, yeah, that's right. I forgot he was there. Yeah.
So, you know,
I wanted him to be there because I wanted to be able to approach him after and tell him, and I did get that opportunity, that this is what he should be fighting. Not against hardworking people that, you know, make a living wage, have health insurance and a pension plan. This is what he should be fighting. And if he was successful in fighting that, more people could have a living wage, health care, and a pension plan. And to me, that would seem like a kind of a priestly thing to do.
Godly, you know, sir.
Godly,
yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, follower of the guy who didn't have a pot to, or a window to throw it out of and told people to give away everything they own and follow me. Yeah. Yeah.
He was a hippie. He had long hair and stuff, that guy.
He was a hippie communist.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
And I guarantee he wasn't white, neither, brother.
No. That blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy just shows up on the paintings, and he's just a stand-in because.
Exactly.
Yeah. Lily White Western Europe wasn't ready for no brown savior.
So how did you, I know you, well, you had to ride back. How did your daughter enjoy D.C.?
Oh, she loved it. She absolutely loved it. They got to go meet Nick Rahal.
Oh, very good.
And I said, well, what did Nick Rahal say? And she said, well, Dad, mostly he said, glad to meet you, glad to meet you.
Right, because there are so many people there.
And they got to meet Rockefeller, and there's a picture of her with Rockefeller. I couldn't tell if there was an electronic line listening into the conversation now that the FISA thing's been passed.
That Mr. Rockefeller, pay.
Yeah.
Voted for and, well, supported.
And had she at the tender age of 14 been arrested in Washington, D.C., she would have had no right to habeas corpus relief, again, thanks to the efforts, the untiring, tireless, selfless efforts of Senator Rockefeller to kill habeas corpus.
Okay, but wait a minute now. The Supreme Court thing, did that restore habeas corpus just to...
No.
Prisoner?
No, it didn't overturn that congressional act. That was with regard to the kangaroo court trials in Guantanamo, which are going on. Have you heard about this thing going on down there?
Remind me.
Yeah, well, the kangaroo court in Guantanamo has put on trial for his very life Osama bin Laden's cabbie.
Oh, yeah, and didn't the court rule that they wouldn't listen to any evidence that was obtained by torture?
I don't know, because they've given evidence of some 40 different sessions of interrogation.
Oh.
And all the FBI agents and CIA people and whatnot, you know, he's very cooperative. When we got him in Afghanistan, he said, hey, come on, you want to go see all the Al-Qaeda places? Let me show you.
Was that after the third or fourth fingernail?
No, that was pre-fingernail.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and then they said, but there were a couple of Stinger missiles in your trunk, buddy. He said, not my car. It's a borrowed car. And you know what? The FBI is going to run title on a car in the badlands of Afghanistan.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the thing that's so important about all this. All the fundamental rules of American justice have been thrown out the window. This guy is on trial for his life, and he has to prove his innocence.
Well, then what did the court do? What did the Supreme Court do here just three weeks ago?
One of the things that happened even more recently than that was this ruling that says that George Bush can have anybody in this country held on suspicion of terrorism indefinitely. What they did a couple of weeks ago, though, that might have smelled like a little bit of a win, was to just say that, you know, you can stick them, you know, if you stick them in Guantanamo, they at least have a right to question their incarceration. But it didn't stop the kangaroo court trials or anything.
Did they have a right to representation?
Just barely. I mean, we know about the Canadian guy there that was held to be unfairly held. And his lawyer was not given the right to tell him that he won his case.
I mean, you know, half of them guys are in there because their neighbor ratted them out because they've been fighting for 20 years, and the Army said, if you tell us, you know, an Al-Qaeda guy, we'll give you 10 grand or something.
Right, and a new big screen TV in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. But we don't want to know about that. You know, or the kid that was tortured, they withheld pain medication from. Oh, it was an enemy combatant. He threw a grenade. You know, what are you going to do if somebody's shooting at you? Oh, don't shoot. You know, both sides are going to blast you.
Well, and
you know, welcome to war.
Correctly, this is a. We we invaded their country.
We did that, didn't we? Yeah, we did do that.
They didn't do nothing to us.
Right.
You know what? You know.
Oh, they were holding Bin Laden
first.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, if the situation had been reversed, those guys that you're
guys parachute in, Don or something.
Yeah, but if the situation was reversed, Wayne, those jackasses that you're talking about, the blathering on the terrestrial buggy whip radio in Beckley, those guys would run out and welcome the invaders with flowers.
Yes, they. And Steve O'Brien would be leading the pack.
Yeah, he would.
That's another thing about him. You know, like all these, you know. Like, after, you know, well, he was done with me or something, that guy, and I don't know, did he used to call your show, is it Brian, Ryan? Brian?
Yeah, there was a Brian, there was a Brian.
Okay, well, a guy named that called up, you know, and wanted to know, you know, what would you think of the dignity if they blew up another city and blah, blah, you know, I was, you know.
I don't know. Let's ask the residents of, how about Fallujah about dignity?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Because we used white phosphorus on them, and that's a war crime.
Oh, well, exactly. We are being, you know, I'm sorry, these people are all war criminals, is what they are, you know.
And, you know, we had some of it go down, unless I misread things. So we had some stuff go down in the House today, you know, the business about impeachment inside the House Judiciary Committee. Mm-hmm. I don't have any knowledge whatsoever of what went down there. I was too busy being gone all day, but
I know it was happening. I read earlier something, or I know Kucinich was going to get speak and offer his opinions and stuff, which, you know.
And remember that Air Force crew that sent the nuke flying around about a year or so ago? Remember those guys?
They finally discovered they were asleep for a few hours.
Well, now they're literally asleep at the switch.
Okay. Oh, that's real reassuring. Reassuring. We lost a B-52 this week too.
Yeah, we did.
The Guam.
That's right.
Yeah.
It could have been one of the ones you worked on once upon a time.
It could have been, but I didn't do anything wrong, Bob.
No. I wasn't saying it was your work, man.
We had one time when I worked for Boeing, we had an airplane of 52 that left our base and on the way to Plattsburgh crashed. And there was a big investigation and all that. And, you know, all the Boeing people got all of us together and told us, you know, these, I don't know, I guess FCC, all these investigators were coming and, you know, just tell the truth and whatever. You know, I told him, listen, man, I didn't do anything that made that airplane crash. I know what I did, and I always tell the truth, so I'm not worried about nothing. I mean, you know, stuff happens, man.
They announced today that the B-52 crew, they're gone, lost.
Yes.
Yeah.
Six of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's, you know, that's sad. That's sad. Oh! I know what, you know, God, I'm taking up too much time. What this guy on the, you know what the big thing is? Why Obama, you know, his trip was so terrible?
Why is that?
Because he didn't go visit the injured soldiers, which the Pentagon asked him not to do.
Right.
Are you familiar with that?
Yeah. Please don't make a photo op out of injured soldiers, Senator Obama.
And so respectfully, he didn't go.
Now, meanwhile, if George Bush wants to go running with a guy with two bionic man legs, that's okay.
He said, geez, I wish I had those. Yeah, right.
Yeah, I think having two bionic man legs is uniquely American.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. Yeah. Well, anyway, this idiot on the radio here is talking about how that is the whole disgrace of the trip. That he didn't go and see these soldiers. He doesn't care about our military. He doesn't care about blah, 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 blah. And, you know.
Yeah, because George does.
Right. And so our current president, you mean the guy that won't allow pictures of caskets returning to the United States? The guy that, you know, there was a family a week or two ago that was trying to film their sons or fallen heroes' burial at a national cemetery, and the film crew was thrown out of the cemetery.
Oh, and the woman, the woman who was in charge of stuff like that at Arlington, she lost her job. Yeah, I mean, they fired her.
Oh, I'll tell you, man, they really stand up for our troops, don't they?
I'll tell you what, they're doing so much standing up, I can't hardly sit down.
Yes. Anyway.
What a bunch, you know?
I know what a bunch. And you know, it's, well, and that, you know, just like you were saying, if that happened here, that they would run out and accept these people and da-da-da-da. I mean, they're all a bunch of chicken hawks, every one of them.
Yeah.
It's just, well, they're amazing. Amazing. Well, listen, man, I'm sure there's other people who want to talk, and I didn't mean to take up this much of your time, but.
Oh, no worries, no worries.
You're on the air, pal.
Well, I don't know. Maybe I'll try to do a little bit after Peter's show this evening, too, if people want to. Yeah.
Right, if I'm conscious, I'll be listening.
Yeah, the old consciousness test. You can't
be. Well, at least I'm honest, man. What can I say?
All right, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, man. Good talking to you.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye. That's the boss. That's Wayne. Let's see. Yeah, about 29 minutes before the hour. We'll just kind of keep it rolling along. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Preston.
Hey, Preston. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Kind of harried, you know, for rolling in the door as late as I did, but I just couldn't stand not to do a show.
Well, we're glad to hear you, for sure. You know, speaking of war and veterans, McCain was here in Denver today. And he spoke to, I think it's called the GI Forum or something like that. It was a veterans group for Hispanic Latino soldiers.
No, really?
Yeah, yeah. And he used the platform to kind of go after Obama and his position regarding the surge. And, you know, so many oversimplifications constantly.
Well, what is this Al Anbar awakening? That's the latest. I guess that's a function of some PR agent somewhere. The Al Anbar awakening. It makes it sound like they're having some sort of poetry love in bongo fest somewhere west of Baghdad.
Right. Can you imagine if left wingers try to use this kind of language?
Oh yeah. No, no. Only right wing. Only Nixon could go to China, Preston. Come on, man.
Right. And there's the Sunni awakening and all this. And it's basically us paying off the people we were allegedly, you know, needed to.
Yeah, they woke up long enough to cash the check.
Right, right. You know, we have to stop the Republican Guard. And, you know, they're such a threat to Western civilization. And then next thing you know, we've got to write checks to the Republican Guard and, you know, get them to go after the people we were allegedly liberating. I mean, it's just such a mess. Pitting people against each other constantly and, you know, arming different factions.
No, but John McCain's personally responsible for the Al Anbar awakening or the Sunni awakening.
Right, right, yeah. Right, and all that stuff.
I've just got this vision in my head after reading that phrase, Preston, of some sheik out in the middle of nowhere getting up one day and suddenly in Arabic saying cogito ergo sum, you know. Oh, look, it's the Anbar awakening.
Yeah, you know, and you know, there's another oversimplification that's constantly used against those who argue that we shouldn't be there, that we should leave, and that is that there will be a bloodbath if we go. And you know, there's no one knows. And there's the problem of denying the current bloodbath, you know, that we've been engaging in and promoting for so long.
Yeah, if we stay, there's a bloodbath. If we go, there's a bloodbath. There's right. been a bloodbath. There is a bloodbath. There's going to be a bloodbath. This is a bloodbath kind of place. Interestingly enough, the only time there wasn't a bloodbath was before March 2003.
Right, right. And you know, Saddam was a tyrant, but even he... His policies were getting more tolerant. He had invited back poets, for example, who had been exiled for their political poetry. His administration was involved with trying to organize a big poetry festival. And
the largest single Christian community in all the Arab world was smack dab in the middle of Baghdad. They're gone now.
Yep. Women had PhDs. They didn't have to wear a veil if they didn't want to. Now the educated ones have left if they had the chance to. Others, not so fortunate, have been recruited for this vast prostitution ring that's now developed in the Arab world, a lot of them being shipped to Gulf states to serve the troops.
Yeah. It's as old as warfare itself.
Yeah, exactly.
Not just the troops, the mercenaries. Remember, there's more mercenaries there than there are American soldiers.
You bet.
And the mercenaries pay better.
Yep. And there's less accountability, and they get ignored in the discussion that, thank the troops and all that. Forget the mercenaries though. And the mercenaries are setting up shop here at home. They're gonna open something along the border with Mexico. Some sort of training camp. They were hounded by the San Diego population that didn't want them there. They backed off. I think they're trying to re-entrench themselves. Who knows? But they're probably going to establish some sort of camp and, war against another target of the state, immigrants. People who do terrible things like pick our food and take care of our children and, pave the roads. And, there's another discussion about whether that depresses wages and things like that. We can have that debate, although that's very mixed and complex. And it shouldn't be oversimplified as well. But they are doing this work, and they get no thanks for it. They just get this constant, you're ripping us off, and you're making our hospitals go broke. Our hospitals have been defunded, and these privateers have taken off with a bunch of money. Again, they're deflecting attention away from that. And classic scapegoating going on once again. Deportations, detentions. That's a big racket as well.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. But one good thing about war, which I hate and can be avoided so many times, but there is something good, and that is we often do end up getting people from other countries coming here, people who have collaborated with us. And we have these Hmong communities and Vietnamese sections, and in some ways they've enriched our country by being here. Everything from cultural things like restaurants are here. We have a community radio station, and these Vietnamese organized and they play Hmong music. And, they came here as a side effect of the war. Well, now Iraqis are going to start coming here. I saw just today they've expanded the visa program from 500, totally shameful. Now it's going to be 5,000. And I hope many...
I remember hearing Paul Harvey having a hissy about this probably a year ago or a little more than a year ago.
About the low number or...
No, about the fact that we're letting any Iraqis in at all.
Oh, gosh. That's a shame. Jeez.
They're going to blow up our country. Good day. That evil old horse molester. Of course, yeah. What are you going to, we're just going to bail out on our collaborators? I mean, there's got to be a little bit of honor involved. I mean, the people who've collaborated with us, their lives aren't worth a plug nickel there at home anymore.
Yeah, and plenty will be brutalized, and we will bail out on a bunch of them. That's part of the bloodbath. We set up this situation where, there are going to be bloodbaths.
There's going to be retribution.
The Russians pulled out of Afghanistan. There's a lot of horrible things that went on. The Muslim fanatics that we had armed and trained went nuts on Kabul. And, they were a traumatized people. And so there are all these authoritarian outbursts going on. We see it in our own country when we were hit 9/11. Look at the changes that took place in our own country with people's attitudes people's openness to torture, people's bloodlust. You know, can you imagine if we had for 10 years B-52s dropping bombs on our heads, or, you know?
Yeah, I wouldn't feel too kindly. And that's the thing with old 894. You know, as it turns out, under the circumstances, pulling him out of that lake or pond or whatever that he catapulted into was a humanitarian act.
Yeah.
They could have let his sorry ass drown.
It's amazing that he's still alive. Yeah, I mean, it's a real testament to their civility. You know, I mean, we always hear these horror stories, you know, about, you know, their savagery, but in many ways, you know, and they never argue that, you know, we're under attack, we need to go there. We need to attack them over there so they don't keep killing us over here. They never argue for revenge. You know, when we go over there to visit, they don't slit our throats, amazingly.
Oddly enough, however, I don't think we can count on the same thing with Iraq because it's a different mindset and it's a different world. Because these are people who still remember the first names of the Crusaders who, you know, slaughtered their, you know, the Osric of whatever, who killed their, you know, 32 times great-grandfather, you know, 1,200 years ago.
Right. There does seem to be more militancy.
Well, it's also embedded in tribal cultures are frequently revenge cultures.
And there are some stories from the faith, you know, that story gets overemphasized and the narrative gets very selective, but there are elements of the faith because Muhammad, you know, came up in a time during, you know, military, there was warfare going on. There's a hit attempt on him, but he escaped and fled to, I think from Medina to Mecca. And went on to live another 14 years or so and to work for social justice. I kind of like that story in some ways more than, you know, the hero getting nailed to a cross, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's, I like the part of the Martin Luther King story where he's marching in the streets. And, you know, and why he was in Memphis in the first place and said a lot better than the part where he gets blown away.
Right.
That's the approach that I take to Christianity as well, because it's the life of Christ that matters to me. Getting off on his execution is a little bit twisted in my book, but
that's a great point. Yep, and that passion.
I mean, he didn't say do unto others as you would have them do unto you from the cross, and he didn't say love your neighbor as yourself from the cross.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly what we got from the cross was, my God, my Father, why have you forsaken me? And there's a big difference there. So that's the death cult. And death cults were big that back then, Preston. That's the death cult that rose up around the mythos of the life of Yeshua. And that is, you know, it's because there was great institutional control to be had in that myth. You know, Joseph Campbell's Power of Myth is still a favorite of mine, and the very title of that speaks volumes. You know, the power, and it's the power of that myth of somebody reveling in his own death, and the rest of the culture following along and saying, well, and apparently that was a very fundamental debate at the beginnings of Christianity. You know, what matters more, his life or his death? And the death cult won out.
Well, it's kind of ironic how we kind of mock Arab cultures for their willingness to be martyrs when we worship, ostensibly, someone who martyred himself. You know?
Yeah, well, it's very interesting you would bring that up because one of our listeners, our buddy Tosh, wrote in today because this fits so well, and I want to share it with you. He said he was talking about a horn section where John and I were talking, and he said, listening to you, John, talk about the implications of the Health and Human Services change, you know, they're trying to change, they're trying to turn birth control into abortion, and that's within the last couple of weeks. He said, in my opinion, the pro-lifers are really after the church. If the pro-life movement is successful, anywhere between 2 and 6 people will be forever alienated from the church for each un-abortion. Then you get the 80% of abortions that merely become illegal abortions. Illegal abortions are the result of the pro-life movement. And here's the kicker, though. If human life is sacred, how do we deal with the willing sacrifice, suicide, for all intents and purposes, of Jesus? How can he be both God and a violator of the sanctity of human life at the same time?
And so,
right, you know, I'm a Christian. Them Muslims, they're zealots, and they don't mind blowing themselves up. Well, how many Christians threw themselves to the lions?
Right.
I mean, the history is replete with people. Yeah, you know, and some of them were in front of Roman administrators who were perfectly reasonable. Who looks at him and goes, "Listen, I don't want to have you killed. I don't want you crucified. I don't want you to be murdered or put into with gladiators or wild animals or any of that stuff. I want you to go home and have lunch." Now, here's a picture of the emperor. There's a couple of candles. You go over, and you kind of bow a little bit, and go to lunch. But the death cult had won out by then, Preston, and that's why they said, "Well, no, you're going to have to kill me." And when you're dealing with somebody like that, what are you going to do? You turn them over to the civil authorities, and you let the law take its course.
Yeah.
Because if he hadn't, they would have killed him.
Yeah. McCain actually also, while he's here speaking of faith and mythology and war, he's meeting with the Dalai Lama.
I heard that today, and I thought that's got to be a fun meeting.
Can you imagine? It'd be interesting to get the audio from that. I wonder what they dialogued about. It'd be interesting to see him meet Thich Nhat Hanh someday, who was in Vietnam, you know, and his village kept getting blown to smithereens. And
well, did you read that thing the other day where it was pointed out that the torture and stuff in the Vietnamese prison camps died out after the death of Ho Chi Minh?
No, I didn't.
And I mean, we're talking about people who were in the same prison camp as McCain, saying, you know, they just didn't do it anymore. It wasn't. It didn't suddenly become Club Med or anything, but they just didn't do it anymore. But now we've got a government that says that everything that they did, and this is the way we have to frame this stuff, Preston. The Bush administration now says that everything that was done to John McCain, no matter how cruel or inhumane or inhuman, everything that was done to him was okay, as long as the person doing it had a good faith belief that it wasn't torture. And see, that's dangerous, because any true believer in any conflict can warp his or her own mind into that place, and it's easily imaginable how that could happen. You see what I'm saying?
Oh yeah. I'm
not torturing this guy. I'm saving my country.
Yeah. And you know, yeah, that's for sure. I was listening to the audiobook of something Chris Hedges put out, that journalist.
Yes.
On civilian killings in Iraq. And they interviewed like 60 veterans of the Iraq War and talked about the circumstances they were continuing to find themselves in. I mean, the deaths caused just by our convoys. They're just like these rolling freight trains. Don't slow down for anything. If a kid gets in the road, they are instructed to run over him. And
those are just truck drivers, okay? Those aren't military truck drivers.
Some are that.
But the support and stuff like that are military. But a lot of those are just, you know, guys in the guys like the speaker in the song by If I Ever Get Back to Houston Again. Doggone it! Come on, I
don't know that one.
Had a music show on Air America for a while. Come on, real revolutionary musician, Steve Earle.
Oh,
Steve Earle.
Okay.
And it's just a guy who got good money for doing a trucking job. And the next thing you know, he's in the middle of the desert driving a tanker and praying for his life.
Yeah.
And those guys don't get PTSD support. The veterans barely get any PTSD support. But you know, if you went over there as a contractor and you come home, And by contractor, I mean like a trucker or something. I'm not talking about mercenaries. But if you go over there to drive a truck and you come home, there's no support and there's nobody there for you when night after night after night, and you close your little eyes, and night after night after night, that little boy gets splayed across the grill of your Peterbilt.
Yep, yep. You know, they do get a sort of support. I think it's a manipulative sort. You know, and I think this constant flattery can also be a sort of manipulation. You know, thanks for defending our country.
Thank you for your service.
Right, right. But I noticed that there are right-wing churches, and there are companies like Boeing that get their members together, and they have, like, packing parties to send out care packages to the troops.
And I got no problem with that. I mean, now I do have a problem with it when it's a religious institution like the one that Mikey Weinstein uncovered a few months back that was sending, Left Behind Eternal Forces video game where you blow away the gay people, the Muslim people, and the unbelievers.
That's what I was getting at.
I got a problem with that. But then again, the Army's new recruiting tool is up online now. I can say this and not be at any risk of any children of anybody listening to this program going and getting it. But all over the world. It's not just the United States. All over the world. Kids can go online and get the new Army video game. It's for sale for Xboxes and all kinds of crap. And just blow people away.
Yep.
And, you know, it has its desensitizing aspect to it, because it's not the same as watching Bugs Bunny drop a piano on somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's so utterly divorced from reality that you can make that, you know, even, you know, one of the great Tasmanian Devil cartoons where Bugs is laid out his little trap for the devil and everything, and he deadpans the camera and says, "What I'm about to do shouldn't happen to a dog." You know, there's... But no, if you're playing a video game and you're blowing away the Muslims, it's a little more real, isn't it?
Mike Malloy, the other evening, I caught a comment he was making, something about a very popular military magazine, and the headline or the cover story was something entitled "A Muslim Slayer" or something like that.
Soldier of Fortune?
Something like that.
Probably.
I think it was that one. But we can respond. In fact, I remember reading about some soldiers who were in Iraq, sitting in their tank, I guess it was, listening to music. And they were listening to Steve Earle's "The Revolution Starts Now."
Well, that's what that "If I Ever Get Back to Houston Again" is on.
Okay. Okay. And so progressive people have sent material as well, their own care packages with different sorts of political messaging in it. And I think that sort of thing is really vital to try to rehumanize people that are military and talk show hosts have been dehumanizing for so long. And
I got to tell you, coming back, I guess it was night before last, talking about dehumanizing, I heard a little bit of Mark Levin.
Mm-hmm.
And I got home and it was like, "Honey, where's the Ipecac?" Because it was just disgusting. People were calling calling him in favor of Kucinich's impeachment resolution. "You un-American, why can't you?" Actually, "You un-American, why can't you?" Yeah, I mean, you talk about a voice made for print. Apparently, talent is not required to get behind a right-wing microphone. Oh, the guy was just awful. Hey, Preston, I got to roll along, brother. I got a couple of blinking lights here, and kind of a foreshortened program. But I'm glad you did call in, and a short version of our Friday conversation, but a conversation just the same.
You like what? Is Peter live tonight?
He is indeed. He's on deck.
Super.
All right.
I'll talk to you later.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Our buddy Preston in Denver. Let's roll along and see what we can do. Hi, welcome to the program.
It's me, Richard.
Hey, Richard, what's up?
Well, three little quickies on my mind.
Okay.
They're going to have to be quickies. I was thinking about Michael Savage. I was just listening to your program about him. I guess it was a week ago. And I think it's time for him to get some of his own medicine. Don't you?
Oh, well, he is. He's been dumped by the only station in the Cleveland market that's carrying him. Every station that carried him in Mississippi has dumped him. A couple more have dumped him, but now the people who sign his check have come out with a press release.
Well, I think it's time to how do I put it? He has been known to have a wide stance, hasn't he?
Yeah. He had a wide stance with. You can argue that he had a wide stance with Allen Ginsberg. Yes.
Exactly. It's time to publicize that, and we need some gay input as to what words to use that will out him as a closet homosexual, and yet not demean gay people.
Well, I think he's a lot of people are afraid to really go down that road, Richard, because he is litigious.
Well, so what?
But this is what came out today. You got to love this. I got to share this with you because this is the press release from Talk Radio Network, and a guy by the name of Mark Masters. Yeah, that's a real name, Mark Masters. he says, despite the concerns of the network on the network's part as to the motivations of Media Matters and other organizations which seek to remove those hosts they disagree with from the airwaves, and its belief that no action against Michael Savage is warranted under all applicable circumstances of this situation, the network does want to take some positive action to address the fact that inartful statements concerning autism were made on one of its programs. As a result, the network will begin broadcasting public service announcements with respect to legitimate autism issues, subject to spot availability, of course, without charge, and will be encouraging other networks to do the same. In contrast to the cynical efforts of Media Matters to manipulate 84 seconds, it was just 84 seconds, just 84 seconds of pure unadulterated, unmitigated hate, manipulate 84 seconds of commentary out of context for its own ends, the network does believe that the issue is about the children. While the 84 seconds at issue has created intense controversy, the network welcomes the opportunity to broaden the discussion on the important issues relating to autism, the autism spectrum, the validity of autism diagnoses, and the ever-expanding drugging of America's children. Thank you and good night.
That was Mark Masters.
And who is that?
He is the CEO of Talk Radio Network.
And you said that was a subsidiary of...
No, they're not a subsidiary.
Oh, okay. Who's a subsidiary of Clear Channel?
Premier.
Can't keep these people straight.
Well, you know, you can't tell the thugs without a program, Richard.
Yeah, I think so. It's not like when I was broadcasting. Yeah. You knew who was who. My parting shot here is... here's something. I don't know if you got the time for this. I'll be quick. You know, about the asthma thing... In the health system that I help run, we got an awful lot of asthma. And, you know, if I look out my window, I can see the Chevron refinery. Now, I'm not downwind of that thing. My air's good, but I can see the refinery. And a doctor I know who works with that population says that he thinks that half of his patients have asthma.
Wouldn't be surprising. The asthma is an absolute epidemic here in the hills.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, we have a similar pollution thing. I mean, you guys have pollution in your part of West Virginia, right?
Oh yeah,
you did when I was a kid.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, and see, I'm looking out here. There's the oil refinery, the big Chevron refinery, you know, where the ships come in. One of them is called the Condoleezza Rice, and in addition, we have freeways with all the diesel exhaust from the trucks, you know, major freeway out here, Route 80, as well as it's the end of the railroad, you know, the very end of the Santa Fe Railroad, and the Southern Pacific goes through here, all major lines, and on top of that, we have all the filth that comes out of international steamships, which are burning, like number two bunker oil or, you know, stuff is
right.
Called,
makes diesel look clean.
Huh? Yeah, exactly. It's garbage.
Yeah, but, you know, that's okay because Michael Savage says the only reason you get an asthma diagnosis is if you're a minority kid whose mama's looking for a check. Hey, Richard, I got to call it quits at that because we're up against it and I got to get Peter fired up and ready to go.
Can I leave you with a little slogan?
Go right ahead.
Okay, I would say a corporation is a dog with an eating disorder.
I will have to chew on that.
Yeah. Good night.
I'll be here all week. See you, Richard.
Bye.
Bye. That's it for a truncated show. I hope you enjoyed what we had. And I tell you what, if I'm up to it, I'll try to do an hour or so after Peter's show is over. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and, of course, always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
All right, a little bit past 11 p.m. here on the East Coast. Your evening's just getting started on the West Coast. A little past 8 for you guys. And I guess it's something like 11 in the morning for our buddies in Australia. Maybe noonish. And this is the second hour of my tonight's program. And what I will do is make sure that this is all put together into one physical three-hour show by the time it goes up for archiving and podcasting and so forth. That'll be a little bit of extra work for Ben. But, you know how it is with Ben, the hardest working man in liberal talk. He's like one of those Indian gods with, 8 or 9 arms. So, and he's sitting around bored because, Ben never has anything to do. What with running the horn and making everything go and all the streams and the podcasts and the archives and So I wanted, but as I said from 8 in the first hour back between 8 and 9 p.m., I was gone today because I was picking up my daughter from coming back from a field trip with a bunch of young Democrats. So that's what knocked out the first 2 hours of the program. But there's too much stuff out there to just let the weekend end without trying to at least hit the high notes. So I hope, if you're listening and you've got something on your mind and you want to talk about it, discuss it. This is conversation radio, all the time in the world you need. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. And this is kind of a return for me because my favorite broadcast part of the day was always the nighttime shifts. I loved the midnight shift at the radio stations when I, back in the day. Because that's where all the fun calls were. Folks who had a little too much or sitting around working and minds going overtime and just gotta say it. So it's fun. So we'll try to knock off an hour or maybe two this evening, and hopefully it'll be as enjoyable to you as it is to me, since we don't do an all foxed up on Friday because it's actually John's Saturday morning, and so I don't we don't like to wreck people's weekends. So, and by the way, speaking of weekends, don't forget to tune in this weekend. We'll be having a new Rick's Place with horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, as well as a new Rick Smith show coming out of Pennsylvania, and a brand new show number 54 for Billy Shears and Night Sounds. All of that begins along about the 5 p.m. hour. We'll also have a new counterpoint for you from Dr. Bill O'Brien. If you haven't heard that yet, you must hear it. It's just eminently thought-provoking. So that's what the weekend looks like, which is almost here. 4 minutes past 11 here behind my microphone. But I wanted to, you know, one of the reasons that I felt compelled to at least do an hour or so or two, when you've got a brilliant piece of writing and you let it go by, you ought to be ashamed. And I've got one of those this evening. You've been, well, if you're a regular to this program, you know that we were among the first to start talking about the Savage Wieners attacks. You know you're a really classy, up there kind of multi-millionaire right wing hate spewing punk ass thug when what you're left with is beating up on autistic children. Man, that's class. And that's exactly what he did. But he beat up on autistic children by way of first slurring and sliming minority kids who happen to have breathing difficulties like, you know, asthma. Oh, he's a classy guy. You've heard it all before. You know what this is about. I don't have to play the audio for you again. However, the internet's most brilliant satirist has provided me fodder this evening that I can't pass up. The internet's most brilliant satirist is, of course, multiple Jeopardy championship winner Eugene Finnerman out of Chicago. And a mission from God. That's what I think when I hear it. Yeah. But anyway, FinnermanWorks.com, FinnermanWorks.com. If you haven't signed up for your RDA of irony, why haven't you? You deserve, frankly, the brilliant insights and observations, as well as deserving a good solid giggle, too. And the Savage Wiener controversy has reached the mind of Eugene Finnerman, and hence this offering. Eugene's mind sort of started going to, down that road of, you know, what other technological or societal advances could the Savage Wiener attack? And hence, how Michael Savage. You ready for this? This couldn't come from anybody but Eugene Finnerman. How Michael Savage, or as we love to call him, the Savage Wiener, would have explained the bubonic plague. Thank you for this, Eugene. If you heard one town crier, you heard them all, claiming a possible link between flea-infested rats and the bubonic plague. Some of you, in a panic over these wild rumors, might consider practicing hygiene. That's your choice. No one, however, should force you to be clean. Your filth is your right. And the facts are on your side. Just consider these questions. Is there really a bubonic plague? You know, maybe half the people in your village have suddenly died. Does that coincidence make it a plague? Do you check every corpse for boils? Of course not. So why blame a disease when the cause could have been a witch's curse, or the Jews poisoning the wells, huh? As for the rumors of the alleged plague devastating all of Christendom, how can you believe anything that those liberal troubadours sing? They're vermin. They indulge in gossip and sensationalism. Yeah, what a sad commentary on the 14th century that once an honorable profession has strayed from entertainment into journalism. Is there a link between vermin and disease? Well, there is a link between liberal vermin and disease, because if you have read my latest tome, liberalism is a mental disorder. Anyway, according to tentative preliminary speculation, some Moorish doctors, and you know how it is with those Moors, they want to destroy us, they want to destroy our culture. They want to take everything away. You know, the next thing you know, you'll be on a prayer rug praying toward Mecca, or they'll cut your head off. Anyway,
these Moorish doctors in Spain, they say that they've noticed a correlation between their personal hygiene and their patient's survival. What a bunch of bums! These findings, they only show that doctors are unhealthy for patients. Trust me, I'm a doctor. I'm Dr. Savage. And if you're listening to me, it's a small miracle that your brains aren't, if you had any. If you're listening to me, you ain't got any brains. But if you was listening to me and you did have some brains, they'd be leaking out your ear holes right now and maybe coming down through your nostrils. Anyway, that research from those Moorish doctors, it was conducted by a bunch of heathens. And they're going to burn in hell. That's what they're going to do. They're going to burn in hell. All you got to do is take a look at a little bit of history. And history puts paid to any connection between hygiene and health. For heaven's sakes, Methuselah. Methuselah never, ever bathed. And he lived to be 969 years old. Then there's Nero. Nero bathed all the time, those filthy Romans. Yeah, they bathed, but they had the filthy minds. He bathed all the time. Couldn't get him out of the baths, him with the boys in the baths like it was with me and Ginsburg. And he dies at 31 years old. And here we are in the 14th century. And we got all kinds of saintly hermits. And they've lived to be more than 8 years old in a cave. And the only thing they got for clothing is a bunch of lice. And speaking of lice and vermin, are rats and fleas unhealthy? Only a liberal would think so. Bunch of sickos. On the contrary, rats and fleas are essential. See, I know this because I am a doctor of holistic ethnobotany. I got my degree by mailing in a matchbook. But anyway, they're essential, these rats and these fleas, for your physical and your spiritual holistic well-being. The presence of rats, in fact, means that there ain't no cats around. And everybody knows. I mean, what, I gotta tell you? I mean, my daddy used to tell me when he was slapping me upside the head and making my ears bleed, he'd tell me that cats are the familiars of Satan. Every rat in your home is a guardian angel. That's the truth. And the fleas? Don't get me started with the fleas. The fleas are absolutely, and trust me, I am a doctor of ethnocentric, ethnobotanical medicine type South Pacific, and I once had a bone through my nose. No, and I'm not talking about what went on with Allen Ginsberg either. Now, fleas are absolutely invaluable for pulling out the foul humors and the black bile of the blood. Yeah, if the fleas ain't biting you, you're going to die of the vapors. Or maybe you're going to die of a demonic possession. You might even have to have, on an emergency basis, somebody might have to stick leeches on you. See there? It's the liberals. The liberals that want to drive your health care up by taking away the fleas. Now, what we got to figure out here is what the real agenda is, the real motive behind this hygiene lobby. Because you see, hygiene is unnatural. Hygiene leads to all kinds of things. You get all hygienic, you start bathing, next thing you know, you're going to be in bed with a man. Or God forbid you're a woman and you're in bed with a woman. That's what being clean leads to. It's unnatural. But you know what? It's all right. Because, you know, I can respect a person's right to, indulge in that sort of sick, deviant, verminous behavior as long as they keep it in private. The closet's where they need to be. Where they need to be is in a closet 6,000 fathoms under the sea with chains around the box. That's it. But we'll tolerate the sick little fetishes for being hygienical and stuff. However, they cannot begrudge us our natural rights to wallow in filth. Because filth is the way God made this planet, and God wants you dirty. Why are they trying to force this hygiene on us? It's sickening, I tell you. People are supposed to smell. That's how we know one from another. Is from our smells. If God didn't want us to have an odor, he wouldn't have put noses on our faces. They're trying to force this hygiene on us, and I'm here to tell you. Don't lie. Don't listen. Don't listen to those liberal troubadours and liberal town criers. They're trying to destroy our society. I'm telling you, this hygiene is not for our own good. When I was a kid, I used to say, hey, you know, Dad, I'd like to take a bath, and he'd slap me upside the head and say, stop being an idiot. If there was a moral justification for hygiene, you'd be getting baptized every day. Hygiene is part of an alien agenda to subvert and replace the very social fabric that holds our feudalistic backward society together. What's going to happen to this country when the serfs start acting like they want to be treated like human beings and the peasants rise up? There's no such thing as bubonic plague. It's the hand of God. These people who want you to be literate. What? Feudalism ain't good enough for them? I tell you, they're unmedieval is what they are. They're unmedieval. They're vermin. They want their renaissance. They're disloyal. They should be put on a prison. They should be put on a prison ship and shipped to some island somewhere. Them with their cleanly ways. These neo-pagans, that's what they are. They're neo-pagans. And they want to clean out your body. And they want to take all that filth that they're getting off your body, and they want to pump your brain full of that filth. It's a racket, I tell you, a racket. And you gotta know that. Because it is. I wouldn't tell you if it wasn't so. That's how it is. Listen to me, America. They're coming for you. They're coming for you.
Savage.
Yeah.
Lord, it took that long just to get my voice back from that. You know, doing that Savage thing just makes me feel like somebody's taking sandpaper to my throat and then had me gargle with turpentine. Lee. So, but thank you. Thank you to Eugene Finnerman for coming up with that brilliant, brilliant piece of parody and satire. The sad thing is it's not that far. It's not that far from what the Savage Wiener does. It's not that far from what the number three talker in America does on a nightly basis. And in fact, our buddies over at Media Matters have busted him again. Now, bear in mind that the Savage Wiener says, no, I'm not going to do the voice again, not going to do it again. The Savage Wiener says that that this has all been taken out of context. Isn't that, that's what the wingnuts always say, isn't it? Well, you're taking me out of context. Well, it turns out he's done it before, he just didn't get caught the last time. He said he admitted himself that he'd previously called it a phony disease, autism. You know, if it wouldn't be so vile to have that piece of filth living in your home, it would be worth it to challenge him just to live with a family that is dealing with autism for a week. Not a month, not a year. You know, not what Morgan Spurlock does, not 30 days. The Savage Wiener is too much of a coward to face the challenges that parents of autistic children face on a daily basis. All he can do is sit behind his microphone and scream and pontificate about how autistic children need to be slapped more. Anybody ever seen the Savage Wiener and Dr. James Dobson in the same room together? Lord, that could be poisonous. I mean, there's Dobson, who wants children to be beaten until they cry real tears, and here's Savage, who thinks that autism's nothing that a nice bit of fisticuffs applied to a child's head can't cure. But, of course, he'll get away with this. He will get away with it. There was a protest, I believe, today in San Francisco by parents of autistic children. There was indeed. And that is what prompted Talk Radio Network, TRN, to issue this phony baloney POS apologia for the Savage Wiener's filth from a guy by the name of Mark Masters. This is a story from a right-wing magazine, and it's just revolting. Dr. Savage has also... See, he's Dr. Savage all the way through. Please bear in mind that Dr. Savage, like Dr. Dobson, couldn't put a Band-Aid on without damn near killing somebody. There have been numerous calls in recent days for Michael Savage, who hosts the Michael Savage Show. No, it's called the Savage Nation. Now, come on, be honest. And there's some truth in that, because what the Savage Wiener is doing, you know, he's part of that 2,520 or whatever number of hours it is of right-wing garbage that spews out for every single blessed hour of liberal talk that America gets. He's part of that. There have been numerous calls in recent days for Michael Savage, who hosts the Michael Savage Show for Talk Radio Network, the network. You can tell it was lawyered up before they ever put it out. Whenever you put Talk Radio Network and then you put paren, quote, the network, close quote, close paren, the lawyers have seen it. Hereinafter referred to as. to be fired or suspended for his brief 84 seconds of commentary concerning autism during the July 16th broadcast of the show. Promptly after the network's management learned of the comments in issue, the network... the way that translates, promptly after the network's management learned of the comments in issue, what that means is, the minute we got our first phone call from an advertiser saying that they didn't want a damn thing to do with anybody who is as hateful and insane as Michael the Savage Wiener is, the network commenced an investigation into the particulars and the circumstances of those comments. What a bunch of damn dirty liars. What's to investigate? The clip is out there. You know what? Put it in context. Play the whole 5 minutes around it. It doesn't make it any better. It's lipstick on a pig. Commenced an investigation of those comments. This investigation began with the network CEO, Mark Masters, personally contacting Dr. Savage to address the concerns and obtain an explanation of... Listen, Wiener. Aflac just dropped us, you jerk. The hell are you saying on this stupid little program you got going here that you're getting paid millions of dollars to do this, Wiener? And picking on autistic kids is the best you can do, you sick little freak? In that conversation and other subsequent conversations, we just got dumped by every radio station carrying you in Mississippi, you moron. And other subsequent conversations. You got dumped in Cleveland, you jackass! And other subsequent conversations between Mr. Masters and Dr. Savage. Dr. Savage explained the circumstances and intent of his statements in considerable detail.
He's got 3 hours a night. He's got 3 hours a night. And theoretically, 3.5 million people listening to him. He couldn't explain it then? He couldn't explain it the night that he said that autistic children should be hit and called idiots?
Yeah, I'm guessing in a Michael Savage Wiener world, Helen Keller would never get to the point where she shows up on the back of his Alabama State quarter. No, she just would have, and she never would have said water at the water pump. She just would have had her face mashed into it. Stop with this blindless act, you idiot. Don't be a fool. Don't look at me like that. I know you can hear me. I don't care if you're deaf. I know you can read my lips. The network also carefully monitored subsequent broadcasts of the show on Monday, July 21st and Tuesday, July 22nd, which were devoted to the subject of autism and further explanations by Dr. Savage of his views on the subject.
Okay, that's it. I've got a doctoral degree. Everybody from now on, you got to call me Dr. Bob, all right? Nah, I can't stand that. That's so phony. You know, this Dr. Savage, that's the same thing with that other right-wing freak who's on the, whose intro begins with stuff like, he was on Babylon 5, and he's an honorary astronaut. Gotta come up with a bunch of phony baloney credentials. Like I said a couple of nights ago, driving home from Concord Beckley in the David K. Johnston lecture, I had occasion, you know, it's AM, it's night, and you like to... And there in iTunes, and I heard this whiny, pathetic, nasal voice made for print thing going out over the airwaves. And I had to wait a little bit, and then I heard the hate start spewing, and I knew it could be, it was like something out of The Night Before Christmas. And I knew it just from the clatter of roofs on it had to be Mark Levin. Not Mark Levine, servant of goodness and decency and light, our buddy here on the horn, but Mark Levin, for whom I occasionally still get phone calls and get to laugh at the little right-wing freakazoids. Oh, you're going to call that turd? Okay. Hey,
11:30. It's 8:36 on the West Coast. I can say turd, right? Yeah. Dr. Savage has clarified his July 16th statements, but not on the air. It was in a private conversation with me, in between me calling him a jackass, a horse's rear end, and a damn fool who was trying to throttle the golden goose that was laying solid 24-carat eggs for us every day if he could just keep his foot out of his mouth long enough for us to keep getting richer. He said that his remarks concerning autism were not directed at those who are in fact challenged by this horrible affliction. Oh, well, I'm feeling better already. But we're instead addressing efforts to broaden the concept of autism beyond those who are truly autistic to broader autistic spectrum of behavioral symptoms, which are also manifested by persons who do not suffer from autism. And his concern that many children are being misdiagnosed as autistic due to the subjective nature of autism diagnosis due to the lack of known biomedical indicators like a blood test to definitively confirm or wait a minute. Right-wing freaks. Wonder why there's not a blood test for autism? Do you wonder? I wonder. Here's the answer. There's not a blood test for autism. Maybe because it doesn't appear in the blood. Or possibly because our government has been weakened to the point that it can be drowned in a bathtub by right-wing repig-licking horses' asses whose positions have been advocated night after night after night after night, 3 hours at a shot, by people like the Savage Wiener. And besides that, never mind all the gobbledygook of the autistic spectrum of behavioral symptoms which are truly manifested by people who do not suffer from autism. Okay, so I'm to understand that the Savage Wiener doesn't want the really autistic kids slapped around and told not to be fools and to quit acting like idiots. He wants children that I suppose he will subjectively determine are faking it to be slapped around, called fools, and told to quit being idiots. This is going to work. Yeah. And see, I happened to, on the night I was driving home from Charleston from the lecture, I turned on, this is West Virginia, like I'm going to get something liberal? Come on, I was just trying to stay awake up the mountain, all right? And there's the Savage Wiener talking with some guy who's got a self-published Vanity Press book talking about the fact that autism is a bunch of baloney and that children are needlessly being put on life-threatening drugs. You know, backing up, backing up, backing up, beep, 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 beep. You know, it's the Savage Wiener. You know, he's either backing up and trying to back away from a topic where he stuck his foot in his mouth or his damn French fries are done. One or the other. He also explained his belief that there have been efforts by certain professionals and professional organizations. Come on, name names here. No, the lawyers have already seen this, and they've told us we can't do that or we'll get our asses sued, okay? The lawyers are they've already ruined several highly expensive suits over this one. Not to mention the silk underwear. Certain professionals, this is the Fox News approach to journalism, some people say certain professionals and professional organizations to expand diagnoses of autism more broadly for various reasons, and his concern that this victimizes and stigmatizes children who are misdiagnosed as autistic. Time out! Which is going to victimize and stigmatize a child more? Being diagnosed as having autism-like symptoms? Or being slapped upside the head, as he advocates, and told that you're a fool and an idiot?
I'm guessing the slapping is going to victimize and stigmatize more, especially if it's coming from somebody that you think loved you at one point in time. Because, you see, what all of this is about, this is every last bit of, oh, Rick Goodner, horn psychotherapist, where are you when I need you? This is all about Savage and his daddy. This is all about Savage and the way he was treated by his father. Because he's talked time and again about how shabbily he was treated by his father, who was some sort of junk salesman or something. And would routinely tell him what a miserable piece of garbage that he was. And so the Savage Wiener sought out another father, not unusual, and found him in the form of Allen Ginsberg, and found him in the form of Timothy Leary, but particularly in Allen Ginsberg. But then, in order to get rich, he had to abandon the decent people that he had been nurtured by and start screaming at the very things that they had taught him. And look what we get for the trouble. 3 hours a night of hate-filled screeching and screaming, trying to get Americans who are frustrated at other things. It's transference. If this were chemistry, it would be a simple replacement reaction. That's all that's going on. And it's tragic, because you know what? Statistically speaking, there's every likelihood in the world that somewhere out there, within the population of people who listen to the Savage Wiener, stuck in a car in traffic somewhere, already boiling with rage, there's a man, and that man is going home, and that man has a child, more than likely a son, and the child has behavioral problems that may or may not have been diagnosed as having something to do with autism, and that man went home. And that man took Savage's advice, because of course he wouldn't lie to his listeners now, would he? And after all, he is a doctor, isn't he? And that man went home, and the first time that that child yawped or barked or made some inappropriate noise, he put the Savage Wiener's parenting advice into practice, and a full-grown man reached back, and slammed his hand into the side of the head of his child and screamed at him, "Don't be a fool! Quit being an idiot!" You realize, this is statistically possible. I'm not saying it's likely. I'm not saying that it actually happened. But such are the consequences of unmitigated, untrammeled hate of the variety that is pushed out at America every night by people like the Savage Wiener. This is America's liberal voice, America's listener-supported liberal voice.
This is The Horn.
It's not time to make a change. Just relax, take it easy. You're still young, that's your fault. There's so much you have to know. Find a girl, settle down. If you want, you can marry. Look at me, I am old, but I'm happy. I was once like you are now, and I know that it's not easy to be calm when you found something going on. But take your time, think a lot. Why, think of everything you've got, for you will still be here tomorrow, that your dreams may not. How can I try to explain when I do, he turns away again? It's always been the same, same old story. From the moment I could talk, I was ordered to listen. Now there's a way, and I know that I have to go away. I know I have to go. Change, just sit down, take it slowly. You're still young, that's your fault. There's so much you have to go through. Find a girl, settle down. If you want, you can marry. Look at me, I am old, but I'm happy. It all the things I knew inside. It's hard, but it's harder to ignore it. If they were right, I'd agree. But it's them they know, not me. Now there's a way, and I know that I have to go away. I know I have to go.
All right, and we're back, of course, about 11 minutes before the hour. I really want to be done with this. I feel dirty even just talking about this creep. And you know, there's always the risk of giving somebody free publicity, but Lord, what a hateful human being. And, of course, the thing goes on and on and on, this apologia for the savage wiener. This is... In the context of his broader concerns, it is clear that Dr. Savage's comments were intended to suggest his opinion that in the vast majority of cases... No, that's not clear. It's also a lie. As a result, Dr. Savage's comments did facially appear to be... It's radio. There's no facially. You say it and you mean it, or you... And what he says, he means. Now, granted, he's been let a little bit off the hook by virtue of the use of the term shock jock. And I wish to hell that they would quit using that phrase, or at least learn who it applies to. Opie and Anthony? Howard Stern? Deliberately trying to be a little bit shocking. But you see, that's not
the Savage Wiener's gig, and it's not Hannity. It's not Hannity's gig. It's not Flimball's gig or O'Reilly's or any of these other freaks. They're not there to shock. They're there to indoctrinate. These are indoctrination sessions for the right wing. Pure and simple. They are water carriers for the right wing. Savage establishes his little bit of turf by talking about, well, you know, about how he, you know, loathes George Bush. By God, he didn't loathe him in 2004. He didn't loathe him enough to tell his little knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing followers to stay the hell away from Bush. Stay home. No, didn't loathe him that no. But he's not a shock jock. He is a right-wing ideologue pushing right-wing ideas for pay. Plain and simple. So we'll go away from that. We'll go away from that and move over to old 894. How's that? Let's go talk about old 894. You know who old 894 is. John McCain. Who sat there and goaded and badgered and wheedled at Barack Obama saying, well, why, my friends, why won't he go and see the miracle in Iraq? He needs to go and see the Al Anbar awakening. They're sitting around making love beads and weaving flowers into necklaces while they smoke their hookahs and play their funny little Arab thingy drums. It's all peace, and he needs to go. And then he went. And it was covered. And it was huge. And he had to come out. Well, why wouldn't they send any big-time anchors with me? Must be liberal bias. Except for the fact that the networks were specifically told not to travel with McCain. But, you know, they're facts, and screw facts. So now, here we come again with a statement, an article out of The Atlantic, in which the author, Mark Ambender, reports, quote, Senator Barack Obama has directed his aides to begin planning for a presidential transition team in the event of his election. Well, that article comes out, and where? What's the McCain team? That's the old 894 Express comes out and says that it shows poor judgment on Obama's part. Yeah, because that whole just come in like you own the joint and not learn anything from the last person in the office, that worked out real well in 2000. Now, didn't it? Not so much. Showed poor judgment by planning on winning the election. But here's the one that just jumped off the page at me. And I'll bet you I'm one of the few people that caught this. McCain said that Obama was, by virtue of instructing his staff to start planning for a presidential transition, he said Obama was, and this is a quote, dancing in the end zone. Dancing in the end zone. Dancing in the end zone. Come on, come on, you know what it means. It would seem to be just a sort of garden variety little NFL reference, because there's no end zone dancing in college, right? In college ball. That can draw a flag for unsportsmanlike conduct or taunting, now can't it? Dancing in the end zone. Think about it. Who dances in the end zone? Oh, every NFL season, it's the same thing, time after time after time. pasty-faced, doughy white guy commentators talking about how end zone the touchdown celebrations are ruining the sport. It's ruining the game. No, what's ruining the game is the constant tweaking of the rules to make it more network-friendly and more dull. That's why there are a lot of us out there who say that NFL stands for No Fun League. Dancing in the end zone. What image does that conjure up for you if you're an NFL fan? It conjures up. How about Chad Johnson? How about it conjures up Michael Irvin? How about it conjures up Deion Sanders? How about it conjures up... T.O., Terrell Owens. How about it conjures up... What this is racism. Pure and simple. They are equating Barack Obama with something that is known to piss off a big portion of white NFL watching America. I've heard it. I've been in bars watching football. Daggummit, can't he act like you've done it before? Act like you've been in the end zone before, son. Sure, I've heard it. But look out. Because it's going to be more and more and more of this. I keep saying that. It's going to get thicker and thicker and thicker. Why is doing a dance in the end zone by preparing for a transition team? Good God, as if McCain hasn't done the same thing. But, of course, one could never... Oh, I don't know. I was going to say one could never accuse John McCain of dancing about anything. But then again, maybe the appropriate thing for the Obama campaign would be to come back and say, well, we're sure that McCain's doing the same thing, only it's the Charleston. Or the Virginia Reel. Or the Minuet. He's dancing in the end zone. It's going to keep on coming. It's going to go, and it's going to be like, you know, but it already is. Swill, slime, filth. And they haven't even started yet. They haven't even gotten a good handle on it yet. Because after the convention, it's going to come out in earnest. And it's going to get, I don't know, dip yourself in disinfectant or something. It's going to be brutal. So we'll be back after a little musical interlude, and we'll do a second hour if you're up for it. If there's anybody listening, you are more than free to dial in. You're welcome to. You're encouraged to, in fact. 877-443-2366 or your nickel, 304-658-3333. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is a special edition of The Horn, midnight style. And I'm Bob Kincaid, and I'm up past my bedtime. We'll be right back.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Wow, this is decidedly weird. Doesn't feel like hour three. It feels like hour two, but never mind. This is kind of fun. I like working at night. I don't know. Maybe I'm a vampire. Maybe I need to be hanging upside down from the rafters or something. No. Never wanted to feast on human blood. I was always more of a feast on, you know, beer kind of guy. I could never make it in the vampire world. Let's go to the phone. Susan joins us from Columbia City, Oregon. Hey, Susan, what's up?
A couple things.
Okay.
I've known this for quite a while. The disease that infects people to believe that the end justifies means, infecting, not only the United States, but Israel and other countries shouldn't have come as so much of a shock. But when I got up this morning and read that, a seminary student, an Orthodox seminary student in Israel, took the piece of paper that Barack Obama put between the stones of the Wailing Wall and gave it to the newspaper in Israel to be published. Now,
there's a lot of little pieces of paper there, though. I mean, how could he be sure? Yeah. There's a lot of rocks.
No one is allowed to see those. Those are buried on the Mount of Olives.
I didn't know there was that much protocol behind it. I just sort of figured you stuck it between the rocks, and it did whatever paper does, you know, between rocks over millennia.
And anything left over after nature gets done with it, they're buried on the Mount of Olives. People are not to read those. Those are between the person who writes them and their maker. Now, I'm wicked. You know, I don't know what goes between a Jew and his maker is between him and his maker, but it offends me that somebody would get up on his high horse to judge another person. And I don't care if it was Barack Obama or Sidney McCain or Hillary Clinton.
Now, this is kind of sickening. But what do you expect of right wing religion? It's not like right wing religion is something that is a problem only in this country.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's worldwide. It's the end justifies the means, and it's particularly sickening to see it in Israel because.
So did they publish it? I mean.
Yeah.
Okay, see, I'm a little bit, I've been out of the loop for about 3 days now, so I must plead painful ignorance. What was he praying for? I mean, what did this creep expect to find, that he was praying for the Jews to be pushed into the sea or something like that?
And, yeah, what's really funny is, you know, everybody has been saying all along, Barack Obama is this horrendously egotistical and arrogant man. Would you like to hear the text?
Sure.
Lord, protect my family and me. Forgive me my sins and help me guard against pride and despair. Give me the wisdom to do what is right and just, and make me an instrument of your will.
Oh, Lordy, next thing they'll be screaming that he plagiarized that out of somewhere in the Bible.
I don't feel like I'm violating a confidence because this has already been splattered all over the international press.
No, of course not. But more than that.
But it really offends me that this kid took this out of the Wailing Wall.
But he's Orthodox, okay? He probably thinks that Barack Obama, after all, one, his daddy was a Muslim. I mean, don't you think there aren't ignorant,
You think there's no such thing as an ignorant redneck accent for Hebrew? I guarantee you that kid speaks it. His daddy was a Muslim, and they have defiled our holy wall.
And guess what?
Come on, tell me I'm wrong.
The gas chambers.
Say again.
That kind of thinking leads to the gas chambers.
What do you mean? Yeah.
You don't think that the Germans started out thinking they were being right and just?
Oh, sure they did. Sure they did. But there's no surprise in that, Susan, because there are a lot of tactics that are clearly recognizable from the Third Reich that are being used in Israel today. And that is not a criticism of the Israeli people. That is a criticism of the Israeli government. So the first person that wants to holler anti-Semite at me can kiss my butt.
Exactly.
You know, let's back up a minute. There are a lot of tactics of the old Third Reich. There's a lot of tactics of the Third Reich being used all over that region today. Whether it is the editorial cartoons that show up frequently in the Palestinian and Egyptian press and the Syrian press that depict, and you know, this is really kind of sickly humorous, that depict the Israeli Jews as having big noses and so forth. You know, when there's not 10 cents worth of genetic difference between a Palestinian and a Jew, it's been proven, even though the report was suppressed.
They're all Semitic.
And both Hebrew and Arabic are Nilo-Saharan languages. That didn't even come from that part of the world. Everybody there is an immigrant at some point in time. Of course, everybody on the planet's an immigrant, and you know that. But that's me, and I'm crazy. But the tactics of the Third Reich are hard at work all over the region, because the tactics of the Third Reich are the tactics of hate, and hate flows over Israel and Syria and Jordan and Egypt like a mighty river.
And the United States and Russia.
Oh, we try to pump all we can into that river to make sure it don't dry up. I mean, you can't have some Israeli version of Gandhi or some Palestinian version of Gandhi rising up and trying to bring peace to the region, because that would be very, very bad for American business.
Exactly. And China. And I can't say anything about India because I don't know. I'm sure they have their own version of it. I can't say firsthand because I don't know enough.
I tend to leave the Indians out of it because they've got enough problems of their own. You know, running the world's largest honest-to-goodness democracy is pretty difficult.
Yeah. The British have done their own thing. Nobody is... The Wiccans, I'm sure they would do their thing if they had the power, but we never have had.
But, you know, to get back to your initiative, that's pretty disgusting, Susan, that this little freak would... Not because he's Jewish, but because he's a freak. God, I hate having to even preface self-edit like that. It makes me crazy.
The thing that gives me hope, there is a humongous scandal going on.
Over it?
Oh, big time.
Oh, I imagine there is, but I want to know, do you know yet, did the newspaper have to pay for it?
I don't think so.
I mean, I think those first pictures of Jamie Lynn Spears and her little baby cost OK Magazine something like $10 or $12 million. I would think Obama's prayer from the Wailing Wall would be good for something.
It says, this is from the Time article. It says, went to the wall, fished out Obama's personal note, and delivered it to, and I'm going to spell this name because I can't pronounce it. It's M-A-A-R-I-V newspaper.
Ma'ariv.
Which duly printed the senator's prayer. And there's a humongous scandal. The rabbi who is supervisor of the Western Wall is throbbing at the mouth he has gone on radio and he's condemning it up one side and down the other.
But he's fighting a losing battle because the Orthodox tail wags the normal dog in Israel. And that's not, again, oh dear, that's not saying that it's dogs or Zionist. No. It's just like here in America, the freakish fundamentalist tail wags the American religious dog.
Apparently, the Orthodox community is not at all happy because they want the tradition of, you know, the inviolate nature of just the prayers.
No, but see, they have to take ownership for this because they raised this kid up. They trained this kid.
Yeah.
He's there. And frankly, Susan, this goes back to what I was saying about Savage. You know what? Instead of wheedling around and talking about how Savage was taken out of context, the right wing and all the little fundy freaks and all the little thuggish, the fascistic repiglickins need to take ownership of him. And they need to step up and say, we believe every word he said. He was right. Because you know what? This is what we preach every day. This is the hatred that we foist on America every day. And this is what we want for America. And frankly, the community in Israel needs to do the same thing with that. That kid, you trained him up, you brought him up this way, he's your baby, you bathe him.
Yeah,
but I'm kind of a jerk like that. I mean, see, I'm a little bit sensitive to this because you know, we did the Seneca 2 series down in Institute West Virginia on the campus of West Virginia State University the other night, you know, David K. Johnston. Well, it turns out that Seneca 2's next speaker will be a liberal rabbi. And I think it's October 30th, and of course I'll be down there to broadcast it. But I've already been warned in advance that it may get a little bit hairy.
Oh?
Yeah, because apparently this rabbi holds the absolutely intolerable position that Palestinian people are human beings with a right to exist on the earth.
Oh, heavens forfend.
So Seneca 2 has already been called anti-Semitic. They were called anti-Semitic for having Ray McGovern there, who simply talked about the facts, you know, among them being the fact that the Israeli leadership of the Israeli government has said that the important date vis-a-vis Iran is not the date that they get a nuclear reactor or they get their uranium enriched. The important date for them is the date that George Bush steps out of office because they're not sure that they've got somebody who will go and bomb the snot out of Iran for the living hell out of it after George Bush is gone. So they got called anti-Semitic for that. David Lindorf came and spoke. They got called anti-Semitic for that. Dar Jamal came and spoke about the horrors that he, and you've seen Dar Jamal's work, they got called anti-Semitic for that. And I guess that just, you know.
Yep. But anyway, I gathered that the clergy, the established clergy, Orthodox as well as Reformed, are jumping all over this. They are peeled, put it mildly.
Good. I don't know what the procedure is. Can the little bastard be drummed out? He needs drummed out.
I honestly don't know.
But then again, you know, the religion I was raised in say that you have to forgive him not seven times and not 70 times, but 70 times seven.
It also helps that Obama is known among the Jewish community in the States as one who will help the observant community on the Sabbath, you know, like opening power doors for them and such.
Okay.
Something they can't do if they're observant.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know enough about it, so.
Well, I didn't either until I Googled it.
My source on Orthodoxy is Texas Betsy, and I accept what she tells me without question because, you know, it's just rules I wasn't brought up with, rules I don't understand, stuff I don't get, and, you know, it is what it is.
The term is S-H-A-B-B-O-S, and I'm not going to even attempt to pronounce it. I'm not Jewish, never have been. And then there's another word, and it's G-O-Y, which I understand is pronounced Goy.
Oh, that's us.
Yeah.
Non-Jews.
Non-word.
Shabbos? Shabbos? I don't know. Shabbos?
It's the term for Gentiles who help Orthodox Jews with certain tasks they're forbidden from doing during Sabbath, such as operating electrical devices.
All, well, don't mean anything. All, no, better not do that. It's all just
Greek name.
See, I won't say that. It's all just utterly, it's all utterly foreign to me.
It's totally another faith to me, and it's fine by me, you know, but he's known for someone who is helpful.
Well, good. I mean, our trip on this planet, Susan, is one, Kurt Vonnegut said he thinks that we were put here mostly to dance, and who can argue with that? But when you're not dancing, if you can help somebody else out along the way, you'll be doing a good thing. I don't know. Did you see this thing in the news today about the professor who died, who became huge on YouTube with what was called his last lecture? He was a professor at, I think, Carnegie Mellon University in Pittsburgh. And he died today of pancreatic cancer. His name was Randy Pausch, and the university had put together a lecture series where they asked professors to address their students as though it would be their last lecture. Well, this guy stood up and said, well, this is going to be my last lecture. I'm a walking dead man. And he was a computer science professor. He died at the age of 47. The lecture was Really Achieving Your Childhood Dreams. And it was a beautiful thing. And it's all part of that. You know, we're here to make it better, not here to make it worse. If you're making it worse for anybody, you're not getting the job done. Of course, I think that was a central tenet of Yeshua's teaching.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't teach that from the cross. He taught that along the dusty roads of Palestine. And by the Galilee, and in the Nazareth.
All faiths teach it.
Yeah, at some point, it's somewhere in every faith, it's everything's part of it. You know that you're not
mine, all of them.
Yeah, okay. Whatever passes for mine, because I don't think mine has a name.
Well,
I'm happy being a
Free Baptist. It still teaches it.
Yeah, we're just not so good at living it. I still prefer Frisbyterian. We believe when you die, your soul goes up on the roof and you can't get it down.
Even the Pastafarians teach it.
Oh, sure. Well, the Pastafarians teach it specifically.
Yeah. So did the Wiccans.
Yeah. What evil you do comes back at you.
Well, the canon is and it harm none.
Yeah. The Lord knows through concepts of karma and rebirth and all of that stuff, the Hindus, the Buddhists, animists, Native American, it's there in everything. Because it's the most Susan, isn't it the most fundamental recognition that a human being reaches at some point in early development that I don't want you to do this to me, so I won't do it to you. Those are playground rules, right? Don't pinch me. I won't pinch you if you won't pinch me.
That's what offended me most about this is because, you know, whether you are a Jew, Gentile, whatever, whether you pray at the Wailing Wall or pray at an altar to the goddess or anything in between, your communications between yourself, a god, goddess, whatever, are between that and you and not to be published unless you wish it. They are personal. And that's what I found offensive about it.
Well, yeah, but it's part of the disease. And I can't help wondering, Susan, if we haven't made it worse in the rest of the world. You know, the down in Australia, what John's told us about, there wouldn't be any Hillsong Church with its big old the Sony Jumbotrons and its magnificent lighting and sound systems and, you know, seating for 10,000 if the racket hadn't been proven so successful here by the Swaggarts and the Falwells and the Oral Robertses of the world. And you know what? Right-wing fundamentalism wouldn't be nearly as... It's troubling. It's truly troubling because we get all this done. Wow, you know, the fundamental and the right wingers are so huge on it. We've got to defeat Islamofascism. You know, if there is such a thing as Islamofascism, you know who created it? We created it, Susan.
Yeah, we did.
I mean, Wahhabism was there. In his Seven Pillars of Wisdom, T.E. Lawrence wrote about it in the 20s and about how it rises to a little crescendo and then it crashes on the waves, on the shores of normalcy every so often in the Saudi Peninsula. But this time it hasn't crashed because of the policies of the industrialized West that give it credence by virtue of the way that we treat the world's poor. You know, we created Bin Laden.
Of course we did.
And
if it weren't for us, Bin Laden would be a self-indulgent, probably alcoholic playboy.
You make that sound like a bad thing. That's a joke. I'll be here all week. Try the veal.
Well, and it's like what David K. Johnston said the other night about the price of oil. He said, you want to know what the price of oil is? The price of oil? It's the price of oil is related to the price of 747s.
Because you got to sell more oil for more weaker dollars to pay the money for the new 747. So your oil pumping chic butt can fly around the world and have one for your horses too. Did you hear that the other night? Did that just floor you, Susan?
Yeah.
Did you hear him say that the Saudi oil princes have 747s and other jumbo jets just for their horses?
It wouldn't surprise me. Hey, these are really good horses.
To get your own 747, the damn thing better have wings and talk.
I'm sorry, these are Arab horses. They've got ancestors on their ancestors on their ancestors.
Yeah, but we created by virtue of the way we've treated Israel, we've created the fundamentalist frenzy that exists there. We're responsible for that via things like what went down this week, you know, the Kufi conference. You think that that's aimed at the liberal element of Jewry in Israel? Heck no, it's not.
It's aimed at the nuts.
Well, I wouldn't equate nuts with... No, but it's certainly aimed at the fundamentalist element.
You mean they're not nuts?
I can't equate orthodoxy with nuts.
I'm not saying orthodoxy is nuts. I'm saying fundamentalists are nuts. There's a difference.
There is a difference, but I don't know enough about it. I don't know enough about it to draw the distinction. So I'm trying to be careful because, among other things, like I said, I respect Texas Betsy for
Texas Betsy is not a nut. Texas Betsy is orthodox.
Right, and you can't equate orthodox.
Texas Betsy is now a fundamentalist.
But the right wing element in Israel is largely controlled by its fundamentalist orthodox streak. You've heard Mark Levine say that the family law courts in Israel are controlled by the Orthodox.
Yeah, but that's like saying the Protestant Church in the United States is the same as the right-wing fundamentalists, and we all know it's not.
No, it's not, but that's where the fundies have their foothold. Well, yeah, not that's where the fundies have their foothold. Yeah.
Now, Peter is no fundamentalist. He is, however, a Protestant.
Sure. All of Elmer Cogan is dead, but only part of the class of dead people are Elmer Cogan. Universal affirmatives are only partially convertible.
That's why Betsy is an Orthodox Jew, which is fine. But she is not a fundamentalist nut.
Well, I don't know. See, I don't have the program, so I don't know how you sort them out over there.
I've listened to her. She's
well, no. I'm not talking about that. No. This is not gossiping about Texas Betsy. This is, I don't know how you sort them out over there.
It's simple. You listen to them.
If you speak Hebrew, I guess. To return to your original, I find that just... I find it sickening because it's private. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know that there's some big bearded man in the sky who's peeking down and reading through layers upon layers of stone to find to actually hear or see the written prayer of Barack Obama. I find that highly unlikely.
Well, so do I.
It was a private and personal expression. At least, hey, look, at least the little shitbird didn't put it on eBay. Gotta find a silver lining in the clouds.
Well, that's something, at least.
It's 12:33 here on the East Coast and 9:33 your time. I think I can say shitbird, right?
Yeah.
Okay, just checking.
It's,
I'm dangerous after midnight, Susan. Truly, I am.
Yeah, the whole thing is just, I found the whole thing just flat out offensive. I did find one other thing really offensive, and that was the way the mainstream for-profit media suddenly, after this trip to Europe and the Middle East started turning out really, really well, they suddenly started popping up with the word presumptuous.
Oh, have they got a new word of the day?
Yeah. And they suddenly started popping up with the word presumptuous. You know, as in uppity.
Right. Dancing in the end zone. That's what I'm saying. There's a linkage between all of this garbage.
Yeah. I read that there was just
and you got it exactly right, because you know how that works out.
Oh, yeah.
Eileen, they're calling him presumptuous. What's that mean, Eileen? Emery, that means uppity.
Yeah, exactly. You're an uppity, you know what?
Yeah.
Jeez. I won't use that.
Hey, Susan, I'm going to run along a little bit. I'm going to hit a few stories before we knock off for the evening. But thanks for bringing that to my attention. I had missed it, and yeesh. Never a dull moment.
Anyway, it's up on CenTap along with a lot of the other fun and games.
All right. Thanks, Susan. You have a wonderful weekend.
Okay. You too.
Bye now.
Love, Agnes.
Sure thing. Bye. Nothing safe. Has Dear Leader ever gotten his little purple crayon out and written a prayer and stuck it in the wall? Why didn't they go get that? Well, the Secret Service, you know, we're dealing with a Secret Service that collects his caca and his pee-pee, so they probably collected his prayer, too, because they didn't want to see the fact that he can't spell God. You know, dear dog. Makes me nuts. No, there are, we're talking about all these things, and of course, remember, the Bush administration has declared via a highly redacted memo, 10 pages out of 18 being turned into nothing but black Sharpie markings, which reminds me of a further proof that some horse's ass and some right-wing repiglicking read Catch-22 and thought it was some sort of a manual instead of the dark satiric comedy that it is. Because there's a portion in Catch-22 where Yossarian is given censorship duty, because during the Second World War, letters home were censored for sensitive military information that could be used by the enemy. And it's explained in Catch-22 that the officers who were well enough, who were in the base hospital, were set to were tasked with censoring the enlisted men's letters home. And Yossarian quickly becomes bored with this, and Yossarian then starts to selectively censor the letters. One day, and I think this is an actual passage, one day he waged war on articles so that the words a, the, an were all eliminated. Another day it was prepositions. And finally, in a fit of pique, one day he eliminated everything in the letter except the salutation and the closing and wrote at the bottom, I yearn for you tragically, A.T. Tapman, chaplain. Well, that's what happened with the torture memo that they got from, that the ACLU got via its lawsuit from the Bush administration. I think it's probably a little secret that hasn't been disclosed yet that the bottom of the latest torture memo says, I yearn for you tragically, A.T. Tapman, chaplain, who, by the way, is only an Anabaptist. But no, in that torture memo, it says that as long as the person doing the torture has a good faith belief that he's not torturing, that it isn't torture. In that case, the only thing being tortured is the language and the law. And by the way, it goes on to say that your good faith belief that you're not torturing doesn't even have to be a reasonable belief. It just has to be a good faith belief. The best analogy I can come up with is the guy who is pulling out the fingernails out of some person in our concentration camp down at Guantanamo Bay, who, being asked what he's doing, says, I'm giving this guy a manicure. And when someone, well, why is he screaming? I don't know. Do you really believe you're giving him a manicure by pulling out his fingernails? I really, really do, in good faith. Okay, keep pulling his fingernails out. That's what that is. But for everything that comes out, there's a right-wing piece of garbage that is spewed out again. What is it, 2,500 hours for every hour of liberal talk? There's right-wing spew to cover up for it. Headline, right-wing headline, posh life at Guantanamo, $800 suit for terrorist. One detainee was offered his freedom but responded by saying, no thanks. The detainee said the weather was not very nice in his country then and he'd rather be released in the spring. Guantanamo detainees receive more privileges than U.S. citizens receive in American prisons. According to Kendra Rotunda, a former military lawyer assigned to Gitmo. Major Rotunda, who was at Gitmo from 2002 to 2006 while in the U.S. Army Individual Ready Reserve, says Australian Taliban member David Hicks demanded and received an $800 Brooks Brothers suit to wear in court. Despite the spiffy suit paid for by U.S. taxpayers, Hicks was convicted. And it's a hustle for this freak's book. Rotunda says, they can garden, they can check out videos, they can take classes in English or in their native language. There are all kinds of sports. They get a selection of Nike tennis shoes to choose from. They get halal Muslim meals. The average detainee's gained about 15 pounds. They live in open bays. They eat meals on picnic tables. They serve themselves foods from large pots. And for those who have lost limbs, the military fitted them with state-of-the-art prosthetics. Well, I guess that makes up for that. Yeah, because we'd all rather have a bionic leg than the one that we were born with, right? It's just beautiful over there. I wish I could have stayed. The average detainee has gained about 15 pounds, and they're very picky. Like, if there's a piece of fruit that has a bruise or is bad at all, they send it back, and the military just takes it back and gives them something a little bit fresher. A little bit fresher? A slightly less rotten banana? Okay. But see, this is the game that inmates play with the screws. You complain and you manipulate in whatever way that they will let you.
You know, if you starve yourself to death, they tie you to the chair, strap you down, and cram. I mean, these are adduced facts. This isn't me speculating. And cram a nose up your nose and down your throat into your stomach and keep feeding you and keep you from starving to death, so that later they can put you on trial for your life and maybe hang you or shoot you or gash you or do the horizontal crucifixion thing with you. Jesus. So on the one hand, you get that piece of garbage. And on the other, as a means of getting away from the torture comparison, well, there's what's her name, Laura Ingraham. I guess she's supposed to be the new Mann Coulter. They were all over Barack Obama for his Berlin speech yesterday, because in that speech he said that the U.S. will reject torture and stand for the rule of law. And O'Reilly, remember, the guy who wanted to rub a woman down with falafel, said, "We'll do it live!" No, he said, "Enough is enough with this torture nonsense. It's rank anti-American propaganda." And then the attack blonde, Laura Ingraham, moron, said, "All right, got up there in front of 2,000, well, never mind, check it out. This is too disgusting to miss. It's like watching a horror movie. Don't go into the basement."
The weakest part of Barack Obama's talk was this. "Will we reject torture and stand for the rule of law? Will we... And enough is enough with this torture nonsense. In fighting a vicious war on terror nearly alone, the USA has been restrained in its application of force. This torture on a mass scale garbage is rank anti-American propaganda, and Obama shouldn't be anywhere near it."
He got up there in front of 200,000 people, and he glommed on to one of the most ridiculous and one of the most hateful stereotypes about America, which is that we torture. The fact that he did that on foreign soil, I think, is
well,
absolutely atrocious.
I pointed it out, and now I feel the way you do. He should have absolutely not mentioned
come on.
That's ridiculous.
That was torture.
But,
thank you very
but
much.
But he took it.
And yet they don't realize, especially Laura Ingraham, that one of those CIA agents could give her one of those needle-nose plier manicures. And as long as he said that he believed in good faith, not even reasonably, just believed in good faith, but that by pulling out her carefully, expensively sculpted nails one at a time with a pair of needle-nose pliers, that it wasn't torture, it wouldn't be torture. That's the sad and sick and twisted little world that these goobers live in. And they have to keep at it day in and day out, because there's a segment of America, and you know what? Look, there's an element of it in me. I don't want to believe. I don't want to screw believing. I hate believing. Believing sucks. I don't want to think that my country, that my forebears have fought and bled and died for, I don't want to think that my country does the same kinds of evil crap that the bad guys through history have done. I don't want to think that. I don't want to, but I am confronted with irrefutable evidence that we do. But see, where I reject all the believing BS, the mouth-breathing knuckle-walkers that tune into the likes of Laura Ingraham and Falafel Boy, they're all about the believing. They're Tinkerbell Americans.
"Well, Emery, as long as we don't believe we're torturing, we're not torturing. See, isn't that convenient? Isn't that nice?"
Jiminy. It's... Oh, and you did, I think I mentioned it in the first hour, you did catch the remark from Dear Leader on Friday. George's quote, the regime has also continued its ban against NGO activities that would provide assistance to the suffering and vulnerable people of Zimbabwe. I like that word, Zimbabwe, 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 Zimbabwe. It's a fun word to say once I get it right the first time. But no regime should ignore the will of its own people and calls from the international community without consequences.
When do we start the consequences part? Yeah, I don't mean Zimbabwe. Well, I guess we're kind of starting the consequences. We're in the consequences part, aren't we? Because everything is part of it. Everything is indeed part of it. The housing bubble, the foreclosure crisis, the collapse confidence in American currency, the howling, mounting, seemingly insurmountable deficits that this little the freak has run up. It's all part of it. And those are the consequences. Oh, he'll never get the consequences that he so richly deserves, and that is to stand in the dock at The Hague and answer for his war crimes and his crimes against humanity. That ain't gonna happen, because nobody's quite big enough to make it happen. But we've been weakened enough that that day may yet come. Not for him, but for someone else. Do you realize with this business about torture and good faith, not even a reasonable belief that that it's not torture, do you realize what that does to some mother's son or daughter on some distant battlefield or distant posting? Because the United States at one point in time was a mirror that was held up to the rest of the world where human rights were concerned for the most part. Not entirely, but in many ways. And while our dedication to human rights has gone down the toilet, nobody's taken down the mirror. Do you think that the people who have had their lives turned upside down won't look up and say, hey, they say that they can do it to us, we can do it to them? Of course you know they will. No regime should ignore the will of its own people. Well, the will of the American people is that the war end. It is the clear will of the people, and yet it is ignored. And calls from the international community without consequences. Well, the international community has been calling for years now, having recognized what a bunch of moronic right-wing dumbasses couldn't, and that was that invading a sovereign nation that had not first attacked us was a clear breach of international law. And of course, as ever, just as the consequences that we heaped on Iraq did not rain entirely down on Saddam Hussein's head, but instead rained down on the heads of mothers and babies and infants in arms in Fallujah and Najaf, just as those consequences were rained upon the ordinary workaday Iraqis over there, so too the evil ignorance of George Bush doesn't rain down on George Bush, but instead it rains down. Oh, God, oh, God, oh, God, it rains down on American people who never had a damn thing to do with what George Bush himself has done. It rained down. It rained down on a 53-year-old woman named Carlene Balderrama. It rained down on Carlene Balderrama, 53 years old, of Taunton, Mass, on Tuesday afternoon about 2:35 p.m. It rained down on her in the form of a single round from her husband's high-powered hunting rifle. I don't know of any low-powered rifles, frankly. I hate that phrase. High-powered rifle. Well, you know, you find me a low-powered one.
Because you see, Ms. Balderrama, Mrs. Balderrama, was losing her home. Not somewhere off in the dim and distant future or the uncertain future. She was losing her home at 5 p.m. that day in Taunton, Massachusetts. That's when the auction was due to start. Interested buyers had already arrived on the house property while her dead and bleeding body lay inside from the self-inflicted wound she had created in her suicide. But she took care of business and tidied everything up before she went. She sent a fax to the mortgage company. It said, "By the time you foreclose on my house, I'll be dead." She left a suicide note right beside her body so it could be easily found, and she told her husband, John, and her 24-year-old son, quote, "Take the insurance money and pay for the house." His husband says he's beside himself, or her husband says he's beside himself. He says he had no clue what she was doing. He said she handled all the finances for the family, as is so often the case. He said it turned out that Mrs. Balderrama, his wife Carlene, his beloved, had been intercepting letters from the mortgage company and shredding them. He said he had no idea whatsoever that she hadn't paid on the mortgage in 42 months. He said she didn't have anyone to talk to, and she didn't come to him, and he didn't know why. He said she put in her suicide note that it just became too overwhelming for her. Between 2004 and 2006, John Balderrama had filed for Chapter 13 bankruptcy no less than 3 times. Each time the court dismissed the petition. The consequences are never paid by the people who performed the evil. Not in this era. It is Bush administration policies. It is Bush administration, the corporate welfare and financial boondoggling and laissez-faire economics that created the mortgage crisis. But it is Carlene Balderrama who pays the price. It is John Balderrama who pays the price. It is their 24-year-old son who pays the price. It's the people who were their neighbors who pay the price. It's the person who got that fax at the mortgage company, who in their own right are simply trying to stay alive and stay afloat and taking any damn job they can get, who picked up the note that came over the fax that said, "By the time you read this, I'll be dead, and I'll be dead before you can foreclose on my house." That person pays the price. There is no want for prices in this country. And there is no lack of people paying them. It's just that the payments The payments are demanded of people who have no business paying for the hatefulness and the stupidity and the pig-eyed greed of the Bushes and the Bear Stearnses and the Freddie Mays and the Bernie Macs and of the world. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, there we go. We get the free market. They get the socialism. David K. Johnston was so right. Time to roll out of here. Thank you for joining me. I enjoyed doing a late night version of the program. I hope you did too. Thank you to the hardest working people, bravest people that I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. They fight every day. They struggle every day to try to keep people like you and me from having to pay the prices of the Don Blankenships and the Republicans of the world and their collaborator, enabler, Democratic allies. Thanks to John Fox, Peter Godbold, the whole Horn team. Thank you to our moderators in the chat room. Thank you to our bloggers, our news ninjas. This is an amazing process that could not happen were it not for the hard work and dedicated efforts of everyone associated with the organization. I wish you all a very happy weekend. Hope you'll join us Saturday night, especially long about 9 p.m., for Billy Shear's Night Sounds. I hope you'll join us for the Rick Smith Show and Rick's Place prior to that, as well as Counterpoint from Dr. Bill O'Brien. Weekends are fun here on the Horn. Try it out if you haven't before. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.